on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, January 29th, 2026 edition of InvestTalk, and we're in the midst of earnings season. There's some good news from some of the big tech names and some bad news and a mixed market. And Bitcoin is down big once again, down to $85,000 per coin. So certainly a mixed market, a lot of moving parts. I'm here for your questions. I'm here to answer them. I'm here to bring you data and perspective so that you can become a better investor. That's what the show is about each and every weekday. So whatever's on your mind, don't hesitate to reach out and give me a call. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance. We'll run down the show topics as usual, but let's tackle this first caller question now.
Hello, my name is David from San Jose, calling regarding KeyCorp Bank. I had it for a while. It's been doing good for me, but I want to know if it's a safe stock to hold. Look forward to your answer. Thank you.
I love this question mainly because of that last part. Is it a safe stock to own? What does that mean? What does safe stock to own mean? Now, it's trending nicely. Its relative strength is 84. Earnings expectations for this year and next year are going up. And so its business is doing well. A lot of banks are doing well because regulations are coming down. They're lending more. The yield curve has steepened over the past year or so. That's positive for their business, et cetera. So in the short term, the answer is yes, I would keep it. It's one of the better performing banks that are out there. But that's a different question than, is this a safe stock to own? Because it's a bank. Banks are never safe. Banks are cyclical. And they are also subject both positively and negatively to changes in the regulatory regime. Remember, volatility can go both ways. In this instance, the volatility is positive, at least in the short term, for banks in general, and especially KeyCorp. Now, we know through history that when regulation is rolled back, that helps the economy, helps things short term, helps lending short term, helps earnings short term typically. But does that also give the leeway for these banks to make a lot of mistakes that turn into more risk that manifests itself during the next down cycle? And the simple answer to that is usually yes. And so, is it a safe stock to own? It's actually probably over the medium to long term getting riskier. But in the short term, trends are positive, earnings growth is good, relative strength is good, chart is good. So I would hold it, but understand that there is risk here and be willing to monitor it and be willing to be open to jumping ship when the tide turns, especially the credit. And we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we'll get to as much as we possibly can. Now, we'll first go over the Fed meeting that was yesterday. What were the positives and negatives around that meeting? How is that going to impact markets, liquidity, interest rates, etc.? So we'll dig into that. Also, I have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to prices on drugs and how that is shifting, how that's actually helping the drug companies in the short to medium term, based on what the current administration is pushing them to do. And then speaking of that, we'll talk about the geopolitical winds that are engulfing the world right now and how that might finally manifest in shifts in flows in flows of capital, flows of investment, and how that will affect different countries. So these are all things that we're going to unpack for this hour. We also have voice bank calls, one on limited partnerships, the other is on Powell Industries, POWL. And of course, we have some questions that came in via the comment section over on the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. But most importantly, will be your live calls. So I encourage you to call right now. 888-99-CHART is the number. Whether you're listening live on KDOW in the Bay Area, AM 1220, or you are listening on our website, and if a lot of people know that, you can stream our podcast every day, 4 to 5 Pacific time on investtalk.com. So if you are outside of the Bay Area, you can always catch us live, listen to us, ask questions, and hear that question. But first, we're going to head into our first break. So whatever's on your mind, I am here for you. I was a resource. Could be money related, ideally money related, right? It could be about real estate. It could be about an individual sector or asset class, or maybe it's just a broad comment on what the Fed is doing, or broader policy, industrial policy, geopolitical winds. All of this matters to markets. It matters to all of you investors. And this is what we are here for. But we're going to head into a break. I'm ready for your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
I'm looking at an ETF. It's Goldman Sachs, NASDAQ.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
If that would be a good hold to have in a Roth IRA for the long-term horizon.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
This isn't really a copper play. This is a iron ore play with some aluminum copper.
If you're looking at ETFs that hold so few names that are so top heavy, I think it is probably ill-advised to pay an expense ratio like this in order to get exposure that you could really get yourself.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Hey guys, Brian from North Carolina here. I'm a big fan of the show. I haven't missed an episode in over 5 years.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a look at the market today. It was a red day overall. You had the S&P down about 9 points, but certainly recovered throughout the day. Really, the growth side of the market was where the red happened. You had the NASDAQ down 172 points, about three quarters of 1%. Dow actually eked out a gain of about 11 basis points there. And if you look underneath the hood, it's really driven by a couple big sell-offs. Microsoft was the biggest, down about 10%. Tesla down 3.5% or so. Meta was strong, up 10%. And these were all based on earnings from last night. The rest of the market was mostly positive. You had names like Lam Research up 3.5%. You had Visa, MasterCard with some nice gains. A lot in the finance space was strong. Names like Apple and Nvidia up slightly. Same with Google. Broadcom is down nearly 1%, kind of in sympathy, I think, to what happened with Microsoft. And so it's certainly a mixed bag, but you are continuing to see a rotation out of what I call the bits in the sky, those paper assets for harder assets. And you did get a bit of reversal in gold and silver, but what's interesting is that they still ended positive. Big reversal intraday, but they... meaning to the downside. And then they slowly climbed back and ended up, like I said, about 0.8% for the day. Nice, solid move, frankly. Copper was up 4.6%, but off its best levels, but still relatively strong there. Bitcoin down 6%, the worst day since December 1st. And I've been kind of flagging this as an indicator, a liquidity indicator. And this, I think, is a signal that we're going to get some sort of a market correction here in the first quarter. It's kind of the one way I can interpret this. You know, you've had general weakness since the October-November timeframe. That's when tech stocks kind of peaked out. If you go look at the technology indices, the NASDAQ, et cetera, they peaked out right around Halloween. and they haven't really recovered, to be honest with you. And so Bitcoin is kind of that, was, as I said before, canary in the coal mine. The fact that that's breaking down kind of tells you a lot about what's happening in underlying the overall economy overall market. And you're definitely getting that rotation from foreign investors into foreign markets. Foreign markets did very well today, whereas the broader market was roughly flat, slightly down, and the NASDAQ was definitely down considerably. So, and you had IFA. Remember, IFA is kind of the broad developed markets. That was actually up 2/3 of 1% on the day. So you continue to get outperformance from those foreign markets, from harder assets like gold and silver and copper. And this is a trend that I think is in the very early innings. I think this is probably second, maybe third inning of this cycle. That's how these things work. If you go back in history and you look at value over growth or hard assets versus paper assets, we go in longer cycles. And we were in a multi-year cycle, or almost two-decade cycle from 08, the bottom, when financial repression started, when interest rates started to drop considerably, brought interest rates to zero. We kept interest rates near the lower bound for so long. That brought the value of paper assets higher considerably. And now you're getting the reversal. And there's a really underinvestment in these harder assets. And that's why these trends that started really in earnest in Q4 are continuing here in Q1. So very interesting, a lot of takeaways, and you know, geopolitical risk is rising as well. And obviously that is manifesting in the charts and in overall performance. Now let's go talk to a live caller, Chris from Maine, looking at Toast, T-O-S-T.
Yeah, hey, Justin. Thanks, as always, for taking my call. Calling about Toast, it's one I've been watching for quite a while. Kind of interested in it. It always seemed fairly expensive. And then it looks like it's getting pretty close to a pretty strong resistance level at this point. When it was in the mid-30s, I actually sold a put on it for the low 30s. And it looks like I might end up with the shares. It expires tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Debating if I want to keep them and hold on to them or either roll the call option or roll the put option or just sell them once I end up with the shares.
Yeah, well, we own Toast. We've been buying it kind of slowly on this broader pullback over the past few months, and it is now down to the low 30s. This is one of my personal favorite growth stocks out there. I think there are a lot of growth names, a lot of software names that are overhyped and overrated. I actually think Toast is underhyped and underrated. I love their business. I love software names that have niche offerings that, and Toast, for everyone else out there, they provide top to bottom technology platform for restaurants, from hardware, software, etc. And they have a very high recurring revenue, growth in free cash flow is increasing, profitability is increasing. They have very little turnover in their client base, and it's just a great business that I think has a lot of potential long term. Now, with that said, it had been trading and still is trading at a little bit of a premium, but I think that premium is justified. Revenue growth last quarter was 25% year over year. This next quarter for Q4, once they announce, it's supposed to also be 25%. Earnings up 33%. Next quarter, up 21% revenue, up 29% in earnings. So earnings growth has slowed, but I think it's still worth a high 20s, 30 multiple, and it's trading at, or it's supposed to earn $1.26 this year on a $31 stock. So you're talking about that high 20s multiple. I think it's a very fair price here in the 30s. And so I would continue to sell some puts and accumulate. I think this is a great way to accumulate these type of names. There's a high implied volatility on the puts, and you're going to collect that premium. You know, your net price is probably going to be below 30, my guess, is based on whatever premium you got for those puts. And so you could roll it, but frankly, I would just add it to my portfolio, sell some more puts, maybe in the high 20s, and keep accumulating on the way down. I think this long term has incredible potential for being a very durable franchise. Thanks for the call. Now we're going to a quick break. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220, in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. Next, I'll get to my focus point soon and the Fed's January decision. So stay with us.
Have you heard about parallel investing? Parallel investing differentiates KPP Financial because it aligns the interests of KPP principals with those of their clients as they each share the same risks and potential for success. Learn more anytime at investtalk.com. Just click on Portfolio Review. The InvestTalk phone lines are open, waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. This is Melissa from Oregon. Thank you so much for your show. My question today is about limited partnerships. Why are some securities limited partnerships, and why do they generate different tax forms? Specifically, I own Energy Transfer, ticker ET, and Enterprise Products Partners, ticker EPD. And they have generated me different tax forms. I think it was a K-2. Is there a reason to avoid limited partnerships? My tax professional suggested that I sell them and avoid limited partnerships in the future. I was looking to see if you can give us your take on limited partnerships.
So we're talking about our K-1s. And yes, this is something we actually avoid for our clients as well. They can create complexities to your tax returns. It's probably why your CPA advise you to sell them. And they're just different types of entities. And more particularly, a limited partnership is a pass-through entity. And that's why they're not paying taxes on the entity level like a corporation. Corporations pay corporate taxes. A limited partnership, whether that's a standard limited partnership or some sort of master limited partnership, which is what you're talking about, is that you're a limited partner. You get a K-1. The taxes are borne by you, and it's usually taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. So it's added to your taxes if it's held in a tax-deferred account, like an IRA or a 401k. Then if you earn more than, I believe it's $1,000 a year in income, that becomes a problem. And yeah, there's just complexities there that you must understand. This is why I always go back to know what you own. Don't just chase a yield. Don't think that it's just because it's paying you something that's the end of the story. You have to understand the tax implications of that. Is that a qualified or not unqualified income? Dividends paid from standard corporations are typically qualified dividends, which means they're taxed at a lower tax rate. And that is usually good, especially if you're holding in a taxable account, for example. So understand what you own. And I would recommend you probably sell them. There are other companies, corporations within that space, pipeline companies, we've owned them in the past for our clients, that are formed as corporations. And they still pay out dividends. They're not as large. They don't have these big 7-8% yields. But tax adjusted, especially if you're in a high tax rate, it can be just as good. Okay. So yeah, they're just different entities. You have to understand what they mean, and I would probably sell them. There we go. As you probably know by now, we received listener questions from the comments section of our InvestTalk YouTube channel. So this one came in earlier. Mikey Chan says, hi guys. Wonder if you could get your thoughts on IREN. Seems to be a lot of hype behind this stock, but not quite sure I'm buying it at the moment. Right, looking at IREN, and this is IREN, Australian-based Bitcoin mining company operating real estate, data center infrastructure, and by renewable energy. So it seems like they started to build out infrastructure for Bitcoin mining, and maybe they pivoted. Really vertically integrated data center business powering the future of Bitcoin, AI, and beyond with renewable energy. Okay. Yeah, sounds like a lot of hype. They're supposed to earn a dollar this year and 29 cents next year. So the $60 stock, we look at, I would imagine it's down today after Bitcoin being down. yeah, down about 4.8% on the day. You know, it's going to be very correlated to Bitcoin. It peaked out back in October when Bitcoin did, and it's been in a downtrend ever since. This is a basically a very levered way to play Bitcoin. It's going to have a lot of operating leverage around Bitcoin. Its free cash flow is negative $800 million. And what is it doing in order to fund that cash flow? It's issuing more and more shares. So when you say the hype, you think the hype is overblown? Absolutely. You shouldn't buy the hype because it is all about Bitcoin. Now, if you want to bet on it because Bitcoin, you think you're bullish on Bitcoin, well, that there's a potential argument there. But I wouldn't be owning it. It's too expensive. If I want to own Bitcoin, I'll just own Bitcoin. Thanks for the call. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story. Japan's rate shock. The carry trade unwinds. While the U.S. is looking to cut rates, the Bank of Japan is hiking for the first time in decades. And we'll discuss how a rising yen could trigger a massive reverse carry trade and crash U.S. tech stocks. That story is tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, and we're ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke?
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds.
You're the best person to ask it.
Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
The symbol is UNIT. Wondering what you thought about this REIT, if it would be a good time to get in.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
So I was thinking, is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR. If you could run that down for me.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I've got something you need to check out. Now, there's ClickUp. If your day starts with 10, 15, 25, or even 40 open tabs, and ends with decision fatigue, because instead of doing your work, you're managing how to manage it. Spreadsheets here, docs there, Slack convos everywhere. It was chaos. But now, there's ClickUp. It brings together projects, docs, conversations, everything in one workspace. ClickUp doesn't just support your workflow, it upgrades it with automation, AI, and customization. It's already trusted by over 4 million teams worldwide, and it helps them finish projects 30% faster. Try ClickUp for free and get 15% off all AI add-ons just for signing up at clickup.com/invest. That's clickup.com/invest. Close your tabs and open ClickUp.
Now, with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The wait is over, and we break down exactly what Jerome Powell said yesterday afternoon and what it means for your money. And we had the Fed meeting yesterday, and they held rates steady for the first time since July. People don't realize that. They cut rates for the three straight meetings, and now it's down to 3.5% to 3.75%. So they kept it steady there. And Jerome Powell said after the meeting that the economy was growing at a robust rate, the jobs market was steady in recent months, and rates did not appear to be in a restrictive territory or significantly restrictive territory. Most Fed members see where we're at if you take the current rate, call it 3.5%, and you subtract out inflation, call it 2.75%, it's about 0.75% is the real rate. And most people or most members think the neutral rate is between that 0.75% and 1%. So the Fed is what they feel like is at a neutral rate based on where inflation's at. Now, inflation rises or falls, that certainly could shift where real rates are. But right now, they're kind of neutral in their mind. So there's really not a reason to do a whole lot. And that's why the market expected this. Now, GDP is growing at about 4.4 4%. Now, if you look at some other metrics, however, and you look at things like gross national income, that's actually been relatively flat over the past couple of quarters. So remember, GDP is more about spending, whereas national income is about income onto corporate and individual balance sheets. Obviously, the president wants lower rates. He called Jerome Powell a moron for not reducing rates. So obviously, there's a political angle to this. But clearly, this change is about a pause, at least for the duration of Jerome Powell's current tenure. He has two more meetings coming up in March and April. And then the first meeting where the market is expecting a rate cut is going to be at the June meeting. That's going to be the first meeting with the new Fed chair. They come on in May. There's not a meeting in May. And so the odds are where they're going to cut is going to be in June. So don't expect the move there. But if you look at the end of the year, the market is actually only expecting 1 to 2 rate cuts. So what's interesting is that although there are 5 rate meetings during the next Fed chair's tenure before year end, the market's only expecting them to cut once or twice. Now, there's some good money if you can bet one way or the other, meaning maybe the new Fed chair will be able to coerce the rest of the Fed governors to cut rates more aggressively. Now, that's the issue here, is that there are 12 Fed governors, and you need 7 of them to vote to cut rates. And so even if you get a Fed chair that is a Trump lackey, he's going to have to battle with the current Fed chairs to get them to acquiesce to the president's demands. So that's why I think the Fed, the market is clearly indicating that that's going to be easier said than done. And the 2-year yield is showing that. The Fed funds rate typically follows the 2-year yield, and that's still hovering right around the 3% rate. Now, there were 2 dissenters, and one was Christopher Waller, one of the candidates left in the race to replace Jerome Powell. So he's obviously trying to send a message, as well as Stephen Moran, who's also a Trump ally and could be appointed Fed governor as well. But it's only 2, and you need a lot more dissenters to get policy to move. Now, when it comes to inflation, the Fed's preferred gauge, which is the PCE number, PCE inflation, that's at 2.8% in November, well above the 2% rate that they target. So that was the meeting yesterday. The market didn't react too much to it. Obviously, today was much more volatile. And the reason there wasn't really a move in markets in a major way was because it kind of met Fed expectations, met market expectations, not only because they didn't change rates, but also the signal going forward was status quo. And frankly, I think that's where we're at. Until you get a new Fed governor, that will be the market moving news. Who is getting confirmed? And will the market start to change their view of how policy will evolve throughout the year? And that will be reflected in mainly the 2-year rate. And so it'll be very interesting to see what that looks like. President Trump has talked about, hey, I know who I'm going to nominate. But then he interviews more people, and obviously he hasn't nominated that person yet. But you're coming up. Let's get through confirmation hearings and all of that. So whoever it is, he probably needs to name that person in the next month. So it'll be very interesting. But when it comes to Fed days, that was kind of a boring one, to be honest with you. Now let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, I was hoping you guys could do an evaluation of Vertiv Holdings Co., VRT. I like the sector it's in. I'm just looking to see if it's too expensive. I know you guys talk about good companies at good prices. I'd like to know if it's either one of those 2 things, hopefully both. I'll listen on the show. Bye.
All right, looking at Vertiv Holdings, and certainly a good company in the right verticals. It designs, manufactures, and services critical digital infrastructure technology for data centers, communication networks, and commercial and industrial environments. So obviously, this is right in the heart of data center development. And I like companies like that have that expertise for digital infrastructure. and their business has been booming. They lost money in 2020. They only made 53 cents in 2022. But in fiscal year 2025, once Q4 earnings are reported, they're expected to make $4.13 and then $5.34 this year, up 29%. Small dividend, good balance sheet, but as the caller said, it is on the expensive side. You're talking about price to sales ratio at 7.8. Forward-looking enterprise value to EBITDA is around 25.8, which is anytime you're above 20, that's a bit expensive. So it is expensive. Now, the technicals have been consolidating recently, and the trend is certainly your friend. A good momentum here. The worry, this is the biggest worry, and this is going to affect everybody within the space, is that if the hyperscalers pull back their CapEx spend, if they realize that they're not getting the requisite revenue they envisioned, and instead of spending hundreds of billions, they only spend tens of billions. That's going to hit a lot of these names because that means their growth is going to slow considerably. That's where I would be excited about picking those names, because that's how these things go. There tends to be that moment where the emotional rush to chase after growth within the industry starts to bump up against the reality of capacity, of profitability. And this new world that was full of promise and hope and optimism starts to hit reality. And some of it works, some of it doesn't. And you start to get a recalibration of the larger companies that feeds into the smaller companies, and thus markets react. And you're likely to see that with Vertiv. So it's a name, frankly, is on our watch list, but it is just too expensive at this time. But if you get a pullback, like I said, if you get the whole space kind of getting a come to Jesus moment where things, optimism reverses, sentiment reverses, and these enter a downtrend, you're going to start to wait for the right time to pick these up, because I think long term, they will be great plays. But I think over the next, call it 12 to 18 months, you're probably going to get a much, much better buying opportunity. So keep on your watch list and be ready for that pullback. Now, from time to time, we receive questions from web forms via investtalk.com. So this question came in earlier. Blue Owl Technology, OTF, pays a nice dividend. How does their business model look to you? Let's take a look at OTF. OTF. And this is a recent IPO, a finance company focused on making debt and equity investments to U.S. technology-related companies. So they are the ones financing these AI data centers. And what's interesting about this is this, what I believe was private, and that's what Blue Owl typically focuses on, are private investments. And this is one of those ones that they couldn't get liquidity, so they brought it to market. And guess what? They got a big haircut. And this is a microcosm of the industry as a whole. When light is put on the business, underlying business of these names, they tend to crumble and the multiples contract considerably. And so the market is telling you that their business model is not great. And you don't want to just say, oh, it's paying a 10% yield. Because if you look under the hood, free cash flow is about $1 billion. That's good. But the return on equity is only about 9%. And their shares outstanding has been going up and up and up. Was it 210 million a couple of years ago? Now we're at 468 million. So they've issued a lot of shares in order to finance their growth. And it looks like earnings are supposed to be $1.33 this year. And that's flat from 2024 earnings of also about $1.32. So only slightly up from there. It's a $13.40 stock. And I listened to the chart. It is in a stark downtrend ever since it went public back in June of next year. So it's a very high-risk name. Could it work out? Absolutely. It could work out. But when you see a 10.5% dividend yield, the first thing every investor should think is, this is high risk. Do I want to be taking this level of risk? That's what you have to ask yourself. I wouldn't touch it. I don't like their business model, and I would pass on it. Now we've got time, so let's roll in another listener question.
I had a question about what a bond auction was. Can you explain what that is to us and how it affects the market? Thank you very much. Bye.
A bond auction, it's a company or maybe the government issuing debt. And they typically run an auction. This happens with treasuries, and you have in the treasury market, you have primary dealers who are bidding on those treasuries. And once again, there's an auction process to bid certain prices. And then there's a methodology to assign those bonds, usually oversubscribed. So there's more bids than actual issue. And then obviously the lowest bidders are going to get that bond. And so it's just a process to get bonds to market without really the middleman of a investment banker. So a lot of times corporations, when they're issuing bonds, it's through an investment bank. They're placing those bonds, usually with mutual fund companies, ETFs, et cetera. And they're trying to gather the capital in order to bring that bond to market. So it's a different process there where they're pitching the investors on the bonds that are coming to market, et cetera. Whereas a bond auction, usually that's treasuries, is just simply a different process. Thanks for the call. Do we have time for one more voicemail? I think we do.
Hello, my name's David, calling from San Jose, calling regarding a natural gas company, OKE. Wanted to get your thoughts and a good entry point on the stock. Thank you.
Are looking at OKE, Oneoke. I never know how to say it, to be honest with you. This is a name that we used to own for clients. We sold it earlier last year. It was in a downtrend, lost momentum, and so we kind of moved on. Now it's regaining a bit of momentum. That's the positive here. It's in a recent uptrend, and the caller had a bit of a mistake in his description, which was that it's a natural gas company. And in some ways that's true, but a better description is that it moves natural gas. It has pipelines that take the natural gas from the wellhead to where it is used, where it is marketed, where it is sold. Okay. So it gathers and processes natural gas mainly in the Rocky Mountains and in the Western Texas region where there's a lot of shale development and shale production growth. And so throughout the years, earnings were growing up. They're going up from $2.49 back in 2020, all the way up to $5.48 in 2023, then $5.17 in 2024, $5.38 last year, and then $5.80 this year. Those estimates are coming down, however, so growth, as I said, is really slowing. And the issue with the shale industry right now in America is that, number one, prices remain range bound. So development of new wells just isn't as economical as it was before. And then when it comes to the quality of wells, all the easy ones, all the good ones have kind of been drilled. And so as time goes on, yes, they're advancing their technology a little bit, but a lot of these wells, they decline fast. Remember, shale wells decline fast in production. And then the new ones that haven't been drilled, maybe they're of lower quality. And so it's becoming higher cost to actually get these wells online. And so until prices rise, you're not going to see an increase in production. And that means less natural gas liquids for OKE to move. And so that's the worry, is growth is certainly stagnated. Now, I like this better than, say, a master limited partnership, because these are qualified dividends at about 5.5%. So I like it in general for the industry as a whole. It's one of our favorites, but understand that growth has slowed in the shale patch, and that is affecting these names. That was InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. So get your question in now, excuse me, at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Don in one of my favorite places, Maui, and let's talk about taxes.
Yes. Yes, sir. This is concerning the 2025 taxes. Read somewhere in the IRS information that if you have income lower than $94,050, that you will not pay, or that you won't pay any capital gains tax. So with that, in hearing that, let's say my income is $64,050 and you have that cut off at $94,050 and I have capital gains of, let's say, $500,000. How much am I going to be paying on that capital gain? Is it a zero or is it just
No, no, no. So that's going to be added. Anyway, so what you would want to do is you'd want to take, let's say, because for this year it's $98,900 married filing jointly. So let's say you earned $48,900 from your job. That means there's a $50,000 difference. So you probably want to take $50,000 in gains so that your adjusted gross income isn't above that $58,900. That makes sense. Kind of like a Roth conversion in that way.
I sort of understand that, but if you look at the information provided by the IRS and it's a statement of if your adjusted income is, then your capital gains is zero or whatever. And that's where I seem to get tripped up. I understand what you're saying, and if that's the case, so be it. But I was hoping for a little bit different. So one way or the other, I am only given no tax on that capital gains. The difference between my income and that 90, I'm talking last year, so it's 94.5 or 94,050. So that's it. Okay, thank you very much.
No problem. Just for everyone out there, I would always consult a CPA. I am not a CPA. I know basics about accounting. There are about taxes. There are complexities. And there are changes that happen, especially new tax bills. I don't have time to keep up with that. My job is to keep up with markets, trends on the investment side. Obviously, we do tax law selling for our clients. We talk about general tax rates based on income and long-term planning and what tax rates you're going to be in, Roth conversions, things like that. But they are general. They are not specific. So everyone's situation is different, especially if you live state by state. Where your income's coming from, whether that's Social Security, work income coming from portfolios, long-term capital gains, et cetera. So make sure you consult with a CPA. This is why I think everyone needs a CPA, almost everybody. If you're just out of college, you know, you're a renter, you don't have assets, you're a simple W-2, fine, do it yourself. But situations like this, everyone needs a CPA. Now let's slip in one more question from 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Tyler from Los Angeles. Looking to make an investment in my portfolio to silver, and I wanted to know what you guys think of these two stocks, Silver Tiger Metals, which is SLVTF, and Discovery Silver, which is DSVSF. I look forward to hearing your answer on the show. Thanks. Bye.
All right, looking at two pretty small names, 6.7 billion for Discovery Silver. And let's see, only 400 million for Silver Tiger Metals. And what it looks like here is Silver Tiger has no revenue. It is completely it's an exploratory miner in, it looks like, Sonora State in Mexico. And these are names, whenever you have a bull market in a commodity, the junior miners, and that's what this would be, it would be a junior miner, is going to go up the most. It's going to have the most volatility and it's going to look the best on the chart. Now, is that the best investment? Right? This went from 14 cents back in August of 2024 to 79 cents now. Discover, though, it went from 48 cents all the way up to $8.30. So, and it's actually has revenue and it has profits and it has cash flow. So I much rather own Discover Silver. I probably wouldn't touch the first one. I would pass on that one, but I like Discover Silver because it has profits, it has cash flow, it has revenue, and it's obviously doing much, much better. Thanks for the call. No, I'm Justin Klein, Thank you for tuning in, and please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find over at iTunes or Spotify, or check out us on our YouTube channel as well. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.